This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Chinese believe that the turtle represents longevity. It is no wonder, then, that we spend our lives minding our own business, constructing our very own Chinatowns, our shells, for the rest of the world to marvel at how ignorant we are. No, really, for all the expectations upon our shoulders, child prodigy from our parents and from the rest of the world, somewhere along the way, from child to machine, the endless scantrons we supposedly churn out must have become blindfolds. We learn to think in black and white, don't question what's wrong or right, and for the love of all things holy, never start or join a fight, even if it's for ourselves. We turn on each other at the drop of a bat, laugh and say, ching chong, because, you know, it's cool to have our mother tongues rust, open our mouths and let the red flicks fall like the crimson tatters of envelopes, golden characters from depart for the bills inside, stare at the face of Washington, and laugh again, spend 10 minutes just taking pictures, because, OMG, I look so Asian in the last one. Ladies, you gotta pop in those contacts, make your eyes bigger so you don't need to hear, wow, you look like such a chink, from other girls with the same summery skin and dark hair as you. And gentlemen, you gotta jack yourself up, make your ego bigger so you don't need to hear jokes about what's in your pants from other boys with the same summery skin and dark hair as you. You see, the Chinese believe that the turtle represents longevity, but we've been soaking up ideas of our own superiority faster than we drain each other's hopes and dreams. We stay within our shells and regurgitate the facts that we are more civilized, hardworking, deserving than others with skin darker than ours, because we bleached ourselves, watered down to become palatable, to become sanitized for the West, never dirty ourselves at politics. As long as the spilled blood isn't ours, then it hardly matters, because we forget so quickly. Our brothers, sisters, ancestors avoided like the plague and torn apart from their families less than a century ago. The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1989 still haunts my footsteps, but I never wanted to remember, because to remember to be difficult, and to be difficult is to lose our status as the model minority. How funny that the only modeling ever done is by porcelain-skinned petite ladies with perfect straight noses, but monolidded for that exotic look, a perfect China doll, if you will. We close our eyes and ears deaf to our own apathy towards each other. We shut ourselves off and work within our shells like the mechanical puppets that we are, that status that we never question. To all Chinese Americans, we believe that the turtle represents longevity, and our parents told us that we must hide, assimilate, stay within our shells and do not stray outside, drink alphabet soup to become ABCs. But a turtle that stays within its shell will waste away and eventually have to face reality.
Hi, welcome to the seventh episode of Speak Easy, where we speak easy about poetry. I'm your host, Elaine Foster, and with me in the studio is Tina Carmelia.
Hello.
Welcome back, Tina. I hear you've been in Germany.
Yes, I have.
How's it been trying to transition back into Malaysia time?
Not so bad.
You seem really relaxed.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Tina, do you know that we are halfway through our poetry series?
Yes, because I produce it every month.
Yes. I'm so grateful that you put up with this so far. So thank you for having me.
And it's my pleasure.
The poets. Today, we are talking about how poetry and poetry slam are being used in education across schools and universities in Malaysia to improve things like confidence, develop self-expression and language skills, mostly English. But poetry in education can do a whole lot more. So to talk about that and why poetry is changing the world, in the studio we have poetry educator Johanna Yusrinal. Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
How are you going?
I'm good. I'm changing the world.
Also in the studio we have a young poet. Her name is Tien. What up, Tien? How are you?
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here today.
Oh,
thank
you're so
you.
Polite. Tien is one of the solo winners from a recent inter-school poetry slam, which we'll get to later. But first, I want to talk to Johanna. Okay, let's start with, how did you become a poetry educator, and what does that even mean?
Oh, loaded. I actually became a poetry educator about 2 years ago, after I attended a slam myself.
Yes.
And I was contacted by a fellow poetry educator to come in and work with her. And that was really cool. And I thought, okay, how can we use this in totally many different platforms across the country and see how we can develop, you know, children's confidence and have people talk about things that they wouldn't talk about in a normal classroom, because with poetry you can unpack so many social issues that, you know, are very uncomfortable for teachers to deal with, or they just don't have the space in their curriculum to talk about it.
Sure. I mean, we'll get on to the challenges of teaching spoken word poetry in classes later, but can you just give us a brief kind of description of what Poetry Slam is, again, just for the listeners?
Poetry Slam is a competition that's meant to make poetry look super cool. Basically, a bunch of poets get together and they perform their pieces on stage, and then they're judged on a score of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest.
Right.
And the one with the most scores wins.
Great. And, I mean, we've been working together for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? That you have been a poetry educator working with me
for two years.
Yeah, you were like my protege.
Oh, my God.
I know. Now you're like a full 20.
21. I know.
Congratulations.
Today I'm the first time that I'm not the youngest person in this room.
The slams, I like to see the slam as the ending point of a long process.
Mm, the light at the end of the tunnel.
How do you feel about that in terms of teaching poetry? Like, what is the point of the slam in terms of the education side? Because people see the slam as a competition, but it's more than that.
I think it's a good drive. I think, as you said, it's a good ending point to the semester, to the year usually that schools do. And the kids have something to look forward to and something to work hard towards. But the work that goes into going to a slam is, I think, crazy. A lot of kids have to do a lot of unpacking, which they've never had to do in their lives. They have to think about issues and think about, you know, how the world affects them. And that takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of classes, and it takes a lot of moderating as well from the teacher to create a safe space.
We have been very lucky where we use the slam as like a gimmick, right? Mm. As a platform. It's actually the poetry education that we're more interested in. So we go in and we teach classes, right?
Yeah.
And then we give them this kind of carrot for the ultimate reason. But
yeah.
For you and I, that the slam isn't the ultimate reason.
What is the reason?
Why do you think that you need to teach poetry in classes like this?
Because I honestly think it changes lives. Like, and to put it into a child's perspective, when we go in and teach poetry, we almost force them to be uncomfortable. We almost put them in this space where they have to act out and be different and not be afraid to say to things that they would usually get ridiculed for. And then that opens up a space for them to talk about things like bullying. You know, we've had
right.
so many kids that open up to us about being bullied.
That wouldn't have happened outside of this classroom
Absolutely
space.
Absolutely not.
And we've traveled a lot, actually.
Yeah.
We were very lucky to get funding from the British HICOM to support our SLAM trainings. And usually national schools don't join because there's no money to pay for this kind of work.
Yeah.
So we got funding to do that. Do you remember when we went to Parit Buntar? I mean, we traveled to really strange,
small... I can't forget Parit Buntar. I got bed bugs on that trip, like, so bad. But the kids were so different than...
The international schools
yeah,
or the private schools?
Definitely, because they're in a totally different environment where everything is created around, you know, the adults in that group. And they don't have the time to think about, you know, social justice or equality. You know, they're just trying to get by, and then
yep.
these kids are sort of put under the same pressure, and they don't have the time to think and reflect
so
on themselves.
Even though we're there under the premise that we're teaching English, that's not actually what we are thinking about.
No, we have
an
agenda.
We have an agenda, which is to, you know, get the kids out of their boxes,
yeah.
to think out of the school space, and to kind of find themselves, right?
Yeah, and to sort of put them in a spot for the future, because then they can sort of go into the real world understanding who they are beforehand.
But it's a Pandora's box, as we know. We don't get to spend very much time there, and we wish we could spend more time there, which is why we'd love to have poetry education full-time in the curriculum.
Yeah, which is why it's so great that a lot of schools now have poetry clubs. You know, they meet weekly, and they can talk about things.
Like TN. We didn't want it. We're not ignoring you, TN. TN, you are a student of a local international school, correct?
Yes, I am.
And you recently competed in the inter-school slam that your school put up, right?
Yeah.
It's a yearly slam?
Yeah, we put it on every year. And usually it's in the first half of the year, but this time it got moved back to the second half.
Explain what you love about the poetry slam.
I think I love the poetry slam in particular because you get to meet other poets, other like-minded people from different schools. You get to hear other people's experiences and perspectives, and you also get to perform your own poetry. And I feel like it's a very inspiring event. I get a lot of my classmates who I may or may not have ever talked to before. They come up to me afterwards and they tell me, wow, I loved your poem. It was really inspiring. Or they tell me like, oh, wow, I want to try writing poetry now. And I feel like that's really beautiful to me, especially since after the poetry slam, we've had more members in our poetry club, so that's
poetry
great.
Club, and that's something yeah. really rare as well. How did the poetry club start? Is it student led?
Now it is student led because our founder has recently left. She went to teach at another place, and now I'm the student leader along with two other of my classmates.
That's really cool. And you are IB 1, did you say? Which is the same as grade 11.
Kind of.
Your poem, it's very mature, yeah. And that's another thing about I found between the slams over the years that the content has become more sophisticated. There are things in there that I don't even know about, like the 1988 Chinese Exclusion Act. Like, is this something you learned in history for the poem and inspired you to write the poem, or is it something that you knew already?
That's the interesting thing, is that I purposely included it in my poem because a lot of people that I went to school with back when I was in the United States didn't know about this act.
Yeah.
And I always felt like there was something about the way that they taught history that was off. They didn't really talk about other minorities and other rights, other than the Civil Rights Act. And so when I got home, I started researching by myself on Wikipedia, and I came across this act, and it made me feel like, you know, we're not the model minority. There has Right. been other atrocities committed in the history, but none of us know about it, and it's never taught in schools.
Do you think that then the poetry and the spoken word and the slam kind of helps you get more access to these kinds of, like, you wouldn't learn that in history class, would you?
No, we wouldn't.
Right. And you've been able to access it and learn about it and research it on your own for your own purposes.
Yeah, I have.
So you've attended both a long day workshop and then you've Yes. done weekly poetry clubs. Mm-hmm. Which do you think is more effective, and how do you think it's more effective?
I personally find that the weekly poetry clubs are more effective, especially for people who have never done poetry before. Like, before I came to my school that I'm currently attending, I've never done poetry. And those weekly poetry clubs helped build my confidence. I got to hear other people every week, and that built my own confidence and inspired me to write more poetry. So I personally feel like for people who are shyer, like I am, it's much more effective to have weekly poetry clubs.
Coming up after the break, we will have more young poets talking to us about their experiences of poetry slam. You're listening to Speak Easy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
What would have happened if the princess had been stuck in a tower forever?
What would have happened if her glass slipper had not got left behind?
What would have happened if the princess had not kissed the frog?
Would she have dug her way out?
Would she wait for help to come passing by?
Would she have found her happy ever after?
Who exactly are women supposed to be?
Skinny?
Well, girls on curves, six never get a man.
Curvy?
Well, better cover yourself up, you'll attract the wrong pair of hands.
Lean?
Too rigid, it might make you look like a guy amongst the rest.
Chubby?
Well, eat healthy, being fat just discourages the best.
Wear makeup.
That's shallow and vain, you're lying, trying to look good.
No makeup?
You are ungroomed, lazy.
Proper ladies always have an elegant mood.
Average grades.
dumb and shallow women aren't quite as effective.
Highly intelligent.
Stay low-key and don't outshine. It's not attractive.
Would you be questioning that maybe they're all
born in the wrong skin? When she got stared at as she was walking down the street, they said it was her fault for wearing a skirt that short, that she never should have enticed him. She knew then she was born in the wrong skin.
We see it scrawled on the posters, screaming across the neon screens.
Women cooking and cleaning and caring, tending and feeding and looking after their children.
Well, men, they go out to work. But what if he wanted to be with his children?
And she wanted to achieve her dreams in the corporate world. What if they were both
born in the wrong skin?
Oh, your daughter would be a perfect nurse.
Oh, your son would be a perfect doctor.
Oh, your sister would be a perfect designer.
Oh, your brother would be a perfect politician.
Why can't she become a doctor?
What if he wanted to be a nurse? What if her brother didn't want to dabble with politics? Why can't his sister be a member of the parliament? Are we putting them all in the wrong skin?
We often see men as leaders and women as followers. Men have ruled the parliament houses for so long.
Too long.
While women could only sit and listen.
Maybe he never really wanted to lead.
Maybe she never really wanted to follow.
Maybe they were born
in the wrong skin. Our body is not given to please the eyes of someone else. Our choices are not to satisfy someone's needs. No one was born into this world to conform to unreasonable standards. Our sole purpose is to be content in our own skin.
Let them be comfortable in their own form.
Let them have satisfaction when seeing their image. And not dwell on thought of being too bold, too big, or too beautiful. Because we are never, ever born in the wrong skin.
Hi, welcome back to Speakeasy. I'm your host, Elaine Foster, and I'm here joined with my producer, Tina C. If you've just joined us, I've been speaking to poetry educator Johanna Yusrinal and spoken word youth poet T. Yen. Joining us in the studio now are Amanda Lim, Alyssa Fung, and Tarani Mahadeva.
Woo! Yay!
You are Poetry Slam winners, am I correct?
Slammers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Was this your first slam, Amanda? Amanda and Alyssa, you won the group category for the Poetry Slam, correct?
Yeah,
yep.
Correct.
So you're just two out of four people?
Mm-hmm. Along with our teammates, Hannah and Caitlin.
Yep, it was our first Poetry Slam because we've never really done poetry before. We've done public speaking, we've done complaining and ranting, but actually going together as a group and speaking poetry? No, we've never done that before.
Yeah, we've never even written, like, actual poetry. I mean, we've done some analysis in school, because that's
what you do in school.
Yeah,
that's how they teach poetry.
Yeah. But never recited poetry in front of crowds, never written any. So how it started was one day in English class, our English teacher kind of slid in, all smooth,
eyed all three of us and wiggled our eyebrow, be like, "Ever heard of Poetry Slam?"
And we were like, no. What is
what?
That?
You never heard of Poetry Slam?
She just slid a piece of paper in between us, and it had the words, "Three Musketeers, come to Poetry Slam."
That's what you guys are called, the Three Musketeers?
Caitlin then joined afterwards, so then now we are four people, so that term doesn't work anymore.
Okay.
But it was nice while it lasted, I guess. We were very confused, but we all kind of just like nodded at each other. We were like, okay, we're skipping lunch today.
We sacrificed Lenny lunches. I don't think we went down to the canteen for like 2 months.
To train for the slam.
Yeah, what happened was we each individually wrote one poem to see how our style looked like. And just so happens that all four of us, we all had like a corresponding theme, which was kind of like leaning towards the feminism side.
Except me. The other three people in the team all wrote about feminism. And I came to school with like a totally different topic. And I was like, did you guys discuss it without me? Like, why?
So did they force you to go with their topic?
I mean, I felt...
No, she felt bad. So she wrote a whole new...
No, I did not feel bad.
You guys had never written a poem before until this very moment. So how did you even start?
I guess it comes in practice with all our literature practice, you know, writing with flowery language.
Okay.
So we sat down with our iPads, be like, okay, we have a theme. Let's just write. And while we write, we change. And sooner or later, it kind of looks like a poem.
What do you think a poem looks like? In your mind, what were the things that would make the poem a poem?
I think it's just simple sentences kind of structured into...
Rhythm or yeah, there's like pacing?
Like certain rhythm, certain pacing. But the main thing is expressing yourself.
Sure.
Yeah. And for me personally, because we've analyzed Shakespeare and stuff and they have really flowery language or yes. thou and thee and I yeah. can't relate to that. But most of the poetry that I see, they have like casual language, but the yep. way that they structure it and place it, it's short and sweet. And then they put it in a way that it looks like when you read it out, you feel like you want to rant. And the way they yeah. structure it is really, really, really nice.
So, I mean, it suits your public speaking ranting
yeah,
ambitions.
Suits our public speaking.
So the topic, feminism, again, a very mature topic, notwithstanding that you obviously both go to an international school.
Right.
But how did you come mm-hmm. across the topic? Is it something that your teacher introduced to, or was it personal, or something
you were just really angry.
Yeah, I think... It comes from a place of sort of feeling this injustice because with the internet nowadays, compared to the previous generations, well, like a lot of women in the previous generation weren't very educated about these sort of issues. But now that there's the internet, issues that are popular and yeah, prominent, I guess.
Yeah. So
in
we
the
were,
US and UK mm-hmm. and EU.
So when we were putting in all the different pieces and aspects of each of our individual poem into one giant collective potluck of words, we just started ranting, correcting this and be like, disagreeing on different points.
And how much did your teacher, I'm assuming it was your English teacher that trained
yeah.
you, how much did he or she kind of input in terms of the content? And
they edited like
much,
our
actually.
Language. We were the ones that put in the content itself.
Yeah,
they just made sure we had proper grammar and
right, that's
nice
cool.
words.
Tarani, hey, you're the one of the junior winners, actually not from this recent slam, but from the slam that you did with me, right, for Poetry Cafe?
Yeah.
So your poem, which you will be presenting later, is also about feminism, right? Well, there's a bit of empowerment. There's like a female empowerment in it.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of. I want to ask all three of you, like, Tarani, what's it feel like to be in a slam? And we'll go one by one.
It feels like you have, like, the whole stage to yourself. You can say whatever you want to say.
Oh.
And you get snaps.
These kind of poetry snaps.
Yes.
So you felt really, you felt like you could say anything.
Yeah, and you feel, like, appreciated. You feel like a boss.
Wow. Which is kind of what your poem is about, actually. I shouldn't say any more because we haven't heard it yet. Amanda, how about you?
Well, it was our first time. And, well, I have a big mouth. I talk a lot. So when I walked up there, I was like, okay, I just need to talk. And it was kind of nervous because we've seen all the previous poets go and they were like really good. But I think what really gave us that push was when we took the mic out of the mic stand
yeah.
and we all just like synchronized, we just moved
yeah.
it to the side and
yeah.
it was just so free. And the moment we started talking and then it came to the part where we built up the climax and just shouted, whoa. Feeling when you scream into the mic and hear the snaps behind the screaming, it's so
the
encouraging. It was amazing. It's
the,
really, really
yeah,
good.
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I love slam is the encouragement from the other slammers and the other audiences. Like, there's a culture of support, would you say?
Yep.
Did you feel
yeah.
that?
Yes,
yeah, definitely.
Really, really big support. Like, we barely even knew each other. We didn't even know the names. Sometimes we didn't even know the school. But like the moment we came down, they just turned to us and be like, that was amazing. And we were like, no, you're amazing. And then just compliments flying all over the place. And it was just really, it was a really, really fun environment.
Yeah, it was. Everyone was really, really supportive of each other. And I'm really glad about that.
Mm-hmm. Tarani, how do you prepare before you go on stage? Do you have a process or anything? Or do you not get nerves at all?
I go on stage a lot. But before I go on stage, I feel like peeing. But then I tell myself, no, you already went to the toilet. Keep it into yourself.
Psychological,
yeah.
So had you written a poem before you went up to slam last year?
Yes, actually, I took part in the last slam.
Right.
You had
a poetry teacher come and teach you, yes?
Yes.
It was teacher Ilya, correct?
Yes.
Right, from PCKL.
Yes. So we, first I did a group the last year. Then last year I did a group performance and I did a solo one.
So do you guys think Poetry Slam is going to change your life? And do you think we can change the world?
Yes,
yeah,
you can make people
definitely.
More confident. You can make people more confident.
Why is that important?
Because, like, if you don't have self-confidence, you'll be like a tiny mouse, like, hello?
That's
yeah.
true. Sorry, Elisa, what were you saying?
Well, I feel like it really brings out your voice, and it kind of like grants you this sort of
freedom.
Yeah, this freedom, and being on stage and being able to express a sort of vulnerable part of all each of us.
Because you can't really do
I was
that
actually
in school.
Really shocked when I discovered that my teammates had all written poems about feminism.
Mm.
I was actually secretly really, really glad because none of us really knew each other very well before then, before we were kind of assembled as a
team.
All
we were doing just ignoring each other in English class.
Not really ignoring, but there's not enough time. Teachers talking, you can't really talk that much. We don't really pass notes. So, yeah.
Do you get a chance to discuss any of the issues in the poems? I mean, like, yes, you chose the content. Are you able to speak or discuss, like, feminism in your classes with your teachers or...
No, see, that's the thing, though, because in school and in classes, if you say something, people will react to it, and they might react to it all jokingly, be like, ha, 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 you're wrong, or they might react to it, like, really intense. So when we got together in our little poetry practice
gang,
room,
yeah,
we were like, huh, there's nobody here. We can rant and complain, and thus our poem.
But surely
was
born. There's more to it than just ranting, complaining. There must be
Of
course,
motive.
We have very strong opinions about these topics.
So obviously, you want people to listen, and what
yeah,
for?
Yeah, definitely.
What are they listening for? What are you trying to tell them?
We are trying to spread the message because, personally, to me, I feel like in Malaysia there's still a lot of ignorance about issues such as feminism, and. In school, you know, you hear people making sexist, like, horrible jokes.
The gender stereotypes.
The gender stereotypes, yeah. There are a lot of, especially boys, actually, in school, that say stuff like, ha, gender equality, then the entire class just laughs. A lot of the girls just sit there. It's kind of disturbing, because no one really talks about these things. And I think that when we all kind of sat down and wrote our poems... I felt really amazing when we all got together and I realized that a lot of these girls actually in school share the same opinions because we never really talk about these things. I've never talked about feminism to Amanda.
Yeah.
She's never talked about it to me.
Yeah.
But
no.
it's something that you've been thinking about.
So it grants us freedom not only to the competition world but to each other.
Tarani, so you're the only junior here and you've also done group poems before. And what I love about the primary or the junior poetry is the actions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're in a drama club too, right?
Yes.
And you love to act out?
Yes.
So besides, I don't want to give away the topic of the poem, but like, what are some of the other topics that you've written about in your poetry?
Well, we've written about like the endangered species.
Ah, that's cool. And what animal did you... Oh, yeah, you dressed up. What did you dress up as?
I dressed up as a pangolin.
And you did a poem about the pangolin. Well, your verse was about the pangolin.
Yes.
I always talk about how the poetry scene is full of women in Malaysia and how wonderful that is. That's really unique. And even in this generation, there are no boys here today. Why do you think boys don't join the slam or interested in poetry?
Probably because most of them are, like, sexist, yeah? They'll be like, girls do all the talking, boys do all the sports. I'd play badminton, so if I, like, lose a shot, they'd be like, what do you expect? She's a girl. And I'd be like, what did you say?
Boom.
What did you say?
So you get your own back with the poems.
Again, it's the gender roles and stuff. It's not very... It might not come off as very evident, but it's always in the back of their minds. It's always...
But what's stopping boys from poetry? What's stopping
them from...
It comes
from a very misogynistic-ish mentality. And expressing your feelings is often considered something to be looked down upon for guys. And I think that needs to change.
Well, we need to get guys into the club.
Definitely.
We need a poetry educator.
There might be some boys who like poetry, but I think because of peer pressure, like the other boys will be why are you even doing it? Are you a girl?
Oh, dear. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Thank you to Amanda Lim, Alisa Fong, and Tarani Mahadeva. Did I pronounce that properly, Tarani?
Yes.
I'm so terrible. Woo. We've been speaking about how we are using poetry in education in Malaysia. Okay, after the break, we will have Johanna join me back in the studio where we'll give a little poetry workshop. But first, Tarani's poem, which is called...
I Love Pizza!
You're listening to Speak Easy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Do you know what my favorite food is?
Of course it's pizza. Oh, glory, cheese galore. Yellow pineapples, pink pepperonis. With these toppings on my pizza, there can't be anything better. But there is one big question. To share or not to share? That is the question. And once I have the answer to that question, there is another question. Who am I going to share it with? I know. My friends, sisters, mommy, and daddy. And, duh, people who shared their food with me. You know, I know this guy who likes taking other people's food, but does not like sharing. When other people ask him for a cookie, maybe a piece of cake, some jelly, he says, "If I share it with you, I won't be able to share it with anyone else." How rude! What an excuse! I'm definitely not sharing my food with that green-eyed monster. Now, when it comes to choosing my pizza toppings, people say I'm picky. Well, I think they're just icky. Other people say I'm bossy. Would you believe that? Well, do you know what? I love being bossy. Being bossy can get things done. Sometimes it can even be kind of fun. Being bossy gives me the feeling that I can stand up to anyone. And that just comes in handy with the bullies at my school. Now that's really cool. Another thing is, being bossy makes people not take you for granted. And I will not take being pushed around. Lastly, being bossy gives me the feeling of empowerment. Now, back to pizza toppings. I would like loads of oozy cheese, please. And yellow pineapples, pink pepperonis, don't forget the red tomatoes, but no potatoes. Now, children, don't get mixed up. Potatoes are not for pizza. And definitely no disgusting brown mushrooms.
Hi, welcome back to Speakeasy. I'm Elaine Foster. With me in the studio, I have Tina C. Today we've been speaking to young poets, children of all ages,
including myself.
Oh, and Johanna. Hello, Johanna. Hi. By the way, we had brought back into the studio. So Johanna, I was interviewing some of the participants of the annual poetry slams that happen in KL. In fact, there are two annual poetry slams now, which is really cool, with like over 10 or 12 schools participating.
International and, schools?
International and national schools. So for example, Tarani comes from a national school and the other girls come from international and private schools. So like the work that I've been doing and the work that you've been doing, we've been trying to access, right? And now we were discussing earlier about how this is all about funding as well. So before we go, before we lead out the show, oh, the kids had some great responses. You should have heard Tarani, by the way.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, I heard her pizza poem, and I'm like, man, I wish I was like that when I was 13.
So the other girls did a poem about feminism, and they were talking about how spoken word's a great avenue to complain. So which leads me to one of my most favorite poetry prompts that I use in classes. Do you want to run a really quick poetry workshop?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like to complain?
Right.
Love it.
So you and I use poetry prompts or poetry kind of formats in our classes. My favorite one is the What Bugs Me poem. Okay, so basically it's a list of things that bug you. So write a list. It could be from the big things like the macro to the micro. Do you want to go ahead and do that really quick?
All right.
You want to read them out as you write them?
I can try.
Okay, so it will be like, it bugs me when it's raining and I don't have an umbrella. Simple as that. What have you got there?
It bugs me when coffee goes from lava to ice and I miss the in-between.
That's quite abstract. Okay, next.
It bugs me when my taxi driver says he's 2 minutes away for the last 8 minutes.
Yeah, that's really bugging. Next.
It bugs me when the rain won't stop and I have somewhere to be and then I'm home in bed and it's sunny and hot.
God, your life is hard.
It really is. So underprivileged.
How many is that? Three, give me two more.
All right. It bugs me when the vegetarian option at a fast food place is a hash brown between bread.
Mmm. So that's basically a poem right there, right? We've got like four or five things that bugs us, and then they stand up in groups, and then they perform these, and I tell them with real emotion, you know, like, and anger obviously is the easiest emotion to perform.
Gets people going.
It does. But then people ask, what about poetic devices? You're quite good at that. How would you teach poetic device or poetic language with this poem?
People like to start with the most literal.
Yeah.
Give me one. What bugs me?
It bugs me when my air conditioning in my car isn't working and it's 30 degrees out.
Okay. See, that was super literal, right? You're actually in your car and your air conditioning
And most people think literally. That's the thing.
So I like to move from simile to metaphor.
Oh. Because what's a simile, Johanna?
Similes are easier because you compare things to another thing.
Okay.
And then a metaphor is taking the comparison out and making it the simile.
Okay.
So, for example, it bugs me when my car is so hot like...
The sun?
Like the sun.
Yes.
Okay, there's your simile.
Okay, so it bugs me when my car is so hot like the sun. Okay, wow, that's already, I'm getting poetic already.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you went from, it bugs me when my air conditioning doesn't work in my car, it bugs me when my car is like the sun.
Okay, and then?
Now we're going to go to metaphor. Ooh. So what you're going to do is take out the word like.
Okay.
And you're going to make the situation the sun.
Okay, so it's like, it bugs me when my car... is the sun.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, or it bugs me when my car is driving under the sun.
Driving under the sun. Whoa, and then images just explode in your head.
Exactly.
Suddenly a very prosaic sentence becomes extremely poetic. Johanna, thank you for that quick lesson in how
no
to write
problem.
Poetry. Poetry workshops. Okay, that is all we have for this episode. A huge thanks to our guest, Johanna Yusrinal, Tien, Tarani Mahadeva, Amanda Lim, and Alisa Fung. Kids, we love them. If you missed any part of this interview, you can download the podcast on the BFM app available for free from Google Play or the Apple App Store. I'm your host, Elaine Foster. My producer has been Tina Carmelia. Original music by Boy Tasik, a.k.a. Fyrus Firdaus. This has been Speakeasy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.